I knew that I had trouble focusing. I got distracted easily. And I knew that there was this medication that could help me focus. And that was it. End of story. Mm-hmm. ADHD treated. At the time I was diagnosed with ADHD. But that was it. It was, okay, you get distracted. Here, take this focus pill. That's it. Send you on your way. For the next 20 years, I thought everything else that I was struggling with was my fault and me being a terrible human. I had potential and I just needed to try harder to reach it. I did not understand my condition. I think the doctors that I went to must have thought that I understood, but I didn't, because I was diagnosed before anybody really understood what it was or what it meant. So every month or 3 months, I would go to the doctor and it would be, how are your meds working for you? Yeah, good. Any side effects? No. Cool. Here's a prescription. And that was it. Nobody ever asked me if my life was working. I would have been like, oh no, not at all. I have so many unpaid parking tickets shoved into my glove box and my credit is terrible. I keep getting fired from jobs and I keep marrying people that I'm not sure that I like and then divorcing them 4 months later. There was so much about my life that was not working, but we didn't talk about that. We just talked about, are your meds working? And I was like, to help me focus? Yeah, they help me focus. And I didn't understand that there was more to it than that.
Is your child's challenging behavior leaving you feeling exhausted, defeated, and hopeless? You are not alone. And I want you to know you are not a failure and your child is not broken. Welcome to Calm the Chaos Parenting, the podcast for parents raising strong-willed, highly sensitive, or neurodivergent children. I'm Dana Abraham, parenting expert, and I have helped hundreds of thousands of families just like yours. Each week, I'll share simple science-backed solutions to help you feel more grounded, in tune, and deeply connected to your child, no matter what challenge you face. Start your journey from surviving to thriving as a family at calmthechaospodcast.com.
Hey, 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 and welcome back for another episode of Calm the Chaos Parenting Podcast. I am so excited for today. If you have ever wondered, am I ADHD? Do I struggle with executive functioning? Why do I have such a hard time remembering things or staying organized or staying on top of things? Why do I struggle to follow through when I say I'm going to do something? Why am I just so forgetful? If any of those things ring true for you, you're going to love today's episode. And I got to tell you, I find so many parents who come to me for their kids and then realize, wait a second, I think a lot of this could help me. And so I am so excited, Jessica, that you are here. I'm going to try to stay straightforward and have real conversation and not just squirrel in a million different directions because I'm so excited. When I get excited, I have a hard time staying on track, but welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. And it's almost like you have ADHD.
kind of like that. Yes. Yeah. So tell us, for people who don't know who you are, that maybe you're living under a rock like I was, tell us who you are, what you do, and yeah, just get us started here.
Yeah. So I'm Jessica McCabe. I'm the creator and host of the YouTube channel, How to ADHD. And now I am the author of New York Times bestselling book, How to ADHD, An Insider's Guide to Working with Your Brain, Not Against It, which is really cool. It's still one of the first times I've ever gotten to say that. So that's still very exciting.
That is so exciting. Yeah. As an author myself, I know how exciting it's got to be able to say that. And I have got notes all through mine. That doesn't even count all the other notes that I'm going to put through mine, but it is such a toolkit. This is a book that I think everyone needs to read.
Oh, I love that. And I love that you have it marked up. I feel like this book should have come with sticky notes and pens.
I agree. I want to like highlight and notate. I was starting to type up notes while I was listening on, because I'm normally a listener, but this book is such a good read that I can actually read the text as well. And while I was listening, I just was like, I basically am writing the book. I should stop taking notes because I was taking notes on everything I was reading. So I just grabbed the book and started pulling out my sticky notes.
That's exciting. Honestly, yeah, that makes sense though, because this book is my notes on everything that I've learned about ADHD over the last 7 years. So yeah, there were parts I would send chapters to my team to review and I'd be like, okay, highlight the things that you think I should definitely keep and then come back and like most of it would be highlighted. And I'm like, okay, cool. Then I've cut as much as I can. So there's a reason this book is long. This book is definitely thicker than it was supposed to be. I was supposed to turn in 60,000 words and I turned in 110,000.
We are just like samesies here. So much. Honestly, when I read the first part of your book, I sat down next to my daughter. My daughter actually said something to me. She goes, you know, she's homeschooling now. And she goes, Mom, when do you sit down and actually enjoy a book? Because she doesn't ever see me sit down and read. As an adult, I devour audiobooks mostly instead of sitting and reading a book.
Yeah.
And with this book, she's like, you really are reading that book. I said, yes, it's a really good book. And I'm really liking to read it. And you describe how it's written so that it'll be easier to read and more accessible for those of us who are ADHDers and struggle to get through text. And it is comprehensive, but there's so much in there. But in your first chapter, you tell your story. And I'll have to tell you, I want you to tell your story, just a little bit of it, how you came to write this, why you wrote this book. But you told a part of it, and then you said that you were diagnosed at a young age, and I stopped reading. I shut the book. I went to the back of the book, and I was like, how old is she? She's got to be like in her 20s or 30s if she got diagnosed so young, because everything you described is exactly like what I went through, but I did not know, or even I joked about having ADHD maybe in my 30s. I said that, oh, maybe if it was more well known when I was a kid, I would have been diagnosed. And finally, I just started realizing, no, like this is part of who I am and has been a part of who I've been my whole life. But you're my age. Like you just had a really in tune parent. I think that's so cool.
I did. Yeah. And I also had a lot of ADHD in my family is what it was. So I had a cousin who was the more stereotypical boy getting into trouble, bouncing off the walls, struggling in school. And his mom took him to the doctor and said, I see him struggling in school the way that I did. I don't want him to have the outcomes that I had. And the doctor handed her an evaluation form as well. So they both got diagnosed. They walked out of there, both diagnosed. And for that to happen, for a woman to get diagnosed, a grown adult woman to get diagnosed with ADHD in the early 90s was really rare. So this was one of the doctors that was kind of at the forefront, understanding and pioneering research and treatments for ADHD. So she got lucky. And then I got lucky because my mom looked at me and said, well, you're a lot like your aunt. Maybe we should take you to the doctor. But I did have a mom that was really good at advocacy because the first doctor we went to asked me some questions and asked my mom like how I had done in elementary school. And my mom said, she got straight A's. She's a really smart kid. She's a gifted student. And he looked at her and he said, she can't have ADHD. She's too smart. She can't have it. And so my mom said, thank you for your opinion. I would like to see a specialist. The specialist understood that being smart was not in the diagnostic criteria, or that not smart was not in the diagnostic criteria. So they did a whole battery of tests. They checked to see if there was anything else going on. I remember like electrodes attached to my brain and looking at flashing lights. And they did a lot of tests on me and ruled out a lot of stuff. And finally, yeah, I got a diagnosis of ADD at 12 years old in 1994. Wow.
That is almost unheard of for girls to get a diagnosis that young. And or in that age, like back in the day, back in that era.
Yeah, the downside of it, and this was interesting, was they didn't really understand it yet, right? And so I knew that I had trouble focusing, that I got distracted easily, and I knew that there's this medication that could help me focus. And that was it. Like, end of story, ADHD treated, right? At the time I was diagnosed with ADHD, but that was it. It was, okay, you get distracted, here, take this focus pill. That's it. Send you on your way. And so for the next 20 years, I thought everything else that I was struggling with was my fault and me being a terrible human. And I had potential and I just needed to try harder to reach it. And I did not understand my condition. And I think the doctors that I went to, because I changed doctors several times, they must have thought that I understood or that I knew what I was dealing with, but I didn't, because I was diagnosed before anybody really understood what it was or what it meant. And so, or at least very few experts really understood it at the time. And so every month or 3 months or whatever, I would go to the doctor and it would be, how are your meds working for you? Yeah, good. Any side effects? No. cool, here's a prescription. And that was it. Nobody ever asked me if my life was working. I would have been like, oh no, not at all. Like, I have so many unpaid parking tickets shoved into my glove box and my credit is terrible. And I keep getting fired from jobs and I keep marrying people that I'm not sure that I like and then divorcing them 4 months later. It was just, there was so much about my life that was not working, but we didn't talk about that. We just talked about, are your meds working? And I was like, to help me focus? Yeah, like they do. They help me focus. And I didn't understand that there was more to it than that.
And that's why I think that everyone needs this book, is because I think that there are so many misconceptions. We can get into that in a bit too, but there's so many misconceptions that you're either like, oh, that person's definitely got ADHD, or no way, like that person couldn't possibly have ADHD. And a lot of parents come to me and they're just struggling to understand their kid. They're struggling to connect with their kid. Their kid is struggling in life, basically, like you just said. And I don't jump straight. I'm not here to diagnose or anything like that. But I'm always like, oh, if we understood more about how their brain is working, why they're doing what they're doing, if we could dig under the surface and figure this out, then you'll understand, but more importantly, they'll understand how they tick. And if we can do that, we'll accomplish so much here. Because like you said, I still see it. I see parents getting a diagnosis and then a medication, or waiting for a diagnosis and waiting for the right medication, but not getting the education themselves on how brains work, how development works, how executive functioning works, how working memory works, like all these different aspects. And then what are the tools that we can build in that our toolbox that can help us and our kids.
Right. And it's really important. And here's especially why, right? I started taking the medication and it worked. I was one of the lucky ones. The first medication I tried worked really well. My GPA went up a full point without me doing anything differently. It was like magic. It was so effective. Here was the problem. Not only were there still things that I struggled with, because pills don't teach skills, right? I still didn't know how to organize my backpack. I just had the motivation and the focus to give it a shot, right? But I didn't know how to organize things. I didn't know how to do things, and I didn't know how to plan for long-term goals. There was still a lot that I struggled with, but the change was really drastic. And so it really did seem like I was fine just with the meds. Mm-hmm. But here's what happened. When I couldn't get my meds, my only tool was taken away. And I was suddenly so disempowered. I felt useless. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't accomplish anything. I got to the point where I stopped expecting myself to be able to do anything off my meds. And there were a lot of times, especially once I graduated high school and I was trying to go to college and I was trying to manage my life on my own, that I forgot to take my meds, that I didn't fill my prescription in time, that I forgot to make an appointment, that I didn't have insurance. There were so many times that I didn't have access to my meds, and that is exacerbated now by the medication shortage, that I really needed other tools so that I wasn't just completely disempowered when I didn't have my medication.
Yeah. And you talk about in your book, you talk about brains and hearts. And I thought that was really good. And I thought if we talk about that now, it might set up the rest of the episode, because some people are here because they're the brains. Some people are here because of the hearts, and some are both, a lot like me. Can you just describe what you mean by that?
Yeah. So I started every episode from the beginning of my channel with "Hello, Brains," because I figured if they were watching my channel, it was their brains that brought them there. And it slowly evolved to mean specifically people with ADHD and or other executive function challenges that were there to learn about how to support their brain. And then I started realizing there were other people watching too. There were parents and partners and even therapists who were watching to learn how to better support the people that they care about. And so I started calling them hearts. The channel, the book, everything is mainly directed at the brains, but I have a special place in my heart for the hearts, because I think it's such a wonderful thing to care enough to try to learn about a brain that works differently from yours and try to support somebody. It means so much to me when somebody who doesn't struggle with this themselves takes the time to learn and to understand. And then over time, I started understanding like that actually is really beneficial to them too, because whether the brain is yours or it's somebody you love, you interact with that brain on a daily basis or a semi-regular basis. And the better you understand how this brain works, the more effectively you're going to be able to work with it. There are so many people who care about people with ADHD who are just pulling out their hair because they're trying everything that it makes sense for them to try. And it's so counterproductive and it's not working, and it doesn't make any sense why it's not working. And it's like, well, because you're trying to interact with a Mac computer as if it's a PC. Of course it's not working. You're using the wrong commands. The shortcuts aren't the same. The operating system is different, right? And so the better you understand the brain that you're working with, whether it's yours or somebody else's, the more effective you're going to be.
Mm-hmm. And I think, luckily, over the last maybe 10 years, I got started online 10 years ago when I started the blog. And my hyper-focus was on sensory processing because I was the heart for my kid who had just learned about sensory processing. And I was like, wait a second, this explains a whole lot. I wish I could go back and had dug into ADHD back then. Coulda, shoulda, woulda, right? But what I have found over the 10 years is at least there's more awareness now. There are more people who are sharing this information. There's so much information out there that I find sometimes the hearts, the parents, the caregivers can feel like they have to get a PhD in understanding their kid or in understanding all of this. And I think, again, I'm just going to keep pointing back to why I love your book is because it is so easy to understand. And it is broken down into words that are easy to understand and broken down into concept and tools. And that is why I think, honestly, it's not just if you're listening to this and you're like, well, I don't know anyone that has ADHD. I don't have ADHD. I should turn this episode off. It's like, no, you're still here for a reason. You definitely need this book because it's going to help you understand the brains around you and probably help you with your own brains as well. And I always tell parents, when we're stressed out, our executive functioning goes down. So stress goes up, executive functioning goes down. And so whether you have ADHD or not, and this is something you live with on a day-to-day basis, these tools can still help you. If you're in overwhelm, if you're in fight, flight, or freeze, if you're stressed out, if you're dealing with all these struggles of being a parent, these tools are tools that can help you.
Yeah, my editor on this book did not have ADHD, and she pointed out how helpful the tools were because they might be critical for people with ADHD to use, but they're helpful for anybody who's simply human because everybody's executive function gets taxed sometimes. Everybody has a limited working memory. People with ADHD might be more impaired or more limited in their working memory or more challenged with executive function, but you get a poor night's sleep and you're neurotypical, you're going to forget your keys. You're going to have trouble focusing, right? If you're in a doctoral program, the demands on your executive function are going to outweigh your ability to cope almost certainly. So yeah, the tools are not just meant for people with ADHD, but there is a lot of advice that's specific to how our brains work, but it's like universal design where the things that are helpful for people with ADHD and make the world more accessible for us are helpful for everybody. They're just more critical for us because if we don't use these tools, our lives fall apart, right? Like we
100%.
Yeah.
Dana here. And guess what? My book, Calm the Chaos, has officially launched. So if you enjoy the podcast and find the stuff we're sharing valuable, I'm 100% sure you're going to love the book. You can get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com. And if you use this link, you'll also get some special bonuses. So once again, the link is calmthechaosbook.com. Thanks. I hope you're enjoying the show. Yeah. My husband says, oh, she can, when he's explaining to other people and the more he understands me and how I work and I'm understanding myself, he'll say, she can organize with the best of them and she can put together things and she can keep things in order. But what I didn't know for so long is how much it took of her to do that.
Yeah.
It took everything in my power to have an organized schedule and to get the kids signed up for their classes and to make sure that everything was turned in on time or to set the appointments for the kids. It took everything out of me. Once he realized that, he was like, why would I not take on that task if it doesn't stress me out, if it's not hard for me. And so us learning about each other has made a massive difference in our relationship too.
That's beautiful because I'm sure there are things that you're good at that you have strengths that are harder for him. And that's something that we forget as people with ADHD is that the outside the box divergent thinking and the creativity and the hyperfocus and the passion, like falling into a hobby and just like going down a whole rabbit hole. Like these are things that come so naturally to us that we forget that is also valuable. That's a strength too. But society doesn't judge you based on that, right? Like you don't get fired from a job because you didn't have enough brilliant ideas. You get fired usually because you were late or disorganized or you mouthed off at the boss because emotional dysregulation and emotional impulsivity is a thing or whatever. But just because we don't measure ourselves by that, and as women, right? As women, especially as moms, you are almost judged by like, how well could you keep everybody's schedule in order? And how well did you organize the baby dresser and all of these things? These are almost requirements to be a parent, but certainly to be a mom, and society really hammers that in. But that's not the only thing that makes us, and that's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to remind myself of as I'm 8 months pregnant and I have organized and reorganized the baby dresser, and I'm terrified because I'm like, this is going to fall apart. I know it is. In 2 days, I'm going to have no idea where anything is, and my kid's going to need something and I'm not going to be able to find it. And I have anxiety about this, and I have put so many hours and so much, to your point, so much effort yeah. into organizing this and making sure that we know who the kid's doctor is going to be and that we've organized childcare and all of this stuff. There's the executive function it takes to manage your own life, but like then also the lives of like your children and yes. sometimes your partner as well on top of that. It's just, it's a lot. It's really taxing. It's not that we can't do it, but at what cost?
At what cost, I think, is the biggest point here is, and that's what I want parents who are listening to this to take away. If you've been struggling with managing being a parent of a neurodivergent kid, the likelihood that you also are struggling with some of these things is pretty high. And so give yourself some grace. And the same thing I'm going to tell you, Jessica, I'm going to give you a little advice, which is rare on the podcast. Normally it's you guys, the people I'm interviewing. I could hear the revving is what I call it, right? Yeah. You're like revving up. You're like, oh my gosh, and then I'm going to forget this. And then this is going to happen. And it's just, okay, right? This is just a moment. This is just a moment. I can get through this. And then also just like a little bit of your own medicine. Like you've created so many tools. And so then it's just, okay, what this system isn't working. What system do I need? Just remind yourself, we're going to get through this. I just need to tweak the system. And there's really good news that as a parent, you only need to get it right 75% of the time. And I'm like, I can be a C student. I'm pretty sure I can be a C student.
I like that. 75% yeah. of the time. Really? That
75% sounds... of the time, Dan Siegel, he's done the research. You only got to get it right 75% of the time. The other 25% of the time, you can royally F up and it does not matter. the best thing is that one, it shows our kids that mistakes are okay, but also we can help our kids make sense of those mistakes. And it lets go of that pressure of we've got to get it right all the time.
That's actually very reassuring. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It's one of my favorite stats or research for parenting, for sure.
It's a really good stat.
So what I thought we might dig into, like I said, I have got it all earmarked in here. I don't even know if you can see it with the light, but
that's a lot of post-it notes.
It's on each of the tools. So, nice. Or each of the how to focus, the how to executive function, those things. So it's on all of those because I know I'm going to come back to these over and over and over again, not just for me, but also for the parents I work with, because this is the thing that holds them back from having the relationship they want with their family and feeling good about themselves as a woman or as a parent. And I know that it's not because something's wrong with them. And so I now have a very scientific tool that I can go to and say, wait a second, let's go here. Let me show you. You've got to read this part. Also, let me send you the book. I thought maybe what we could do is go through some of the top ones that parents are probably going to struggle with. And the ones that I'm thinking of, and you can tell me what you think, but focus, executive functioning. We already talked about the overwhelm. And then motivation or procrastination.
Yeah.
I find that those are the ones that when parents come to me, it's the reason that they feel like they can't get the goals they want. They can't change the relationship with their family. They can't follow through with a course or read a book or do the things they want to do to make their family better or to help their family. And I just want them to have tools that can help them move forward. Now, obviously, they need to get your book, so they have all the tools that they can create for themselves. But I thought maybe we could dig into a couple of those.
Yeah. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with focus.
Okay.
So what are some of the biggest misconceptions about focus?
The big one is that it's an attention deficit. And that is obviously prevalent as a misconception. Partially because it's in the name of the disorder, right? Like attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It sounds like there's an attention deficit. And that can lead to people really not taking the ADHD seriously, or sometimes not even thinking that their kid has ADHD because they can focus when they want to, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Like when they're interested in something, they focus just fine. Well, yeah, but that's actually part of it. What's actually going on is attention regulation challenges. So we can sometimes focus really well to the point where we're hyper-focused and it's hard to pull us away. And then sometimes we get distracted by everything, but it's the same mechanism that causes that. It's the difficulty mm-hmm. regulating our attention that makes it so we're either laser focused on something or distracted by everything. And so understanding that, I think, is really helpful. And so what that means is we need a lot of help kind of guiding our attention externally. I think I use a metaphor of being a lizard. You know how lizards can't internally regulate their body temperature? We can't internally regulate our focus very well. Lizards go to a different environment. They go lay on a rock if they're cold and they lay in the sun, or if it's too hot, they go lay in the shade. We have to do that with our attention. If we are in an environment where our attention is being pulled by everything, we need to get rid of some distractions. We need to put our phone away. We need to put on some headphones. Sometimes we have to add something, like we have to add a fidget, or we have to turn the TV on because it's whatever it is we're trying to focus on is so boring that our brains aren't stimulated enough. And so we have to be doing something else at the same time to get the level of stimulation that we need. Somebody in the quotes, because every chapter has quotes from the community, I think they were talking about how they have to get to 100%. In terms of their attention. And so sometimes if they're really understimulated, they need to like add something to the task or to the environment to get them to focus. But sometimes if they're overstimulated, there's too much going on, they have to decrease that to get to that attention. I think that's a really, really big one having to externally regulate your attention. Mm-hmm. And what that means, though, is that we need to have the option to go into an environment or to use the tools that we need based on that day. So you mm-hmm. can't, with a kid with ADHD or with yourself with ADHD, be like, okay, so this one environment is what will work, because it won't. It depends. It depends on the task. It depends on how engaging the task is. It depends on what else is going on that might be pulling on your attention, either externally or mm-hmm. internally. Sometimes you're really distracted because you're ruminating on something that went wrong with a friend earlier in that day. And that's going to be really difficult for you to focus on homework, no matter what you do with the environment, because you're being mm-hmm. distracted by an internal thing. And so sometimes you have to process that or get that out before you can switch to focusing. But yeah, just knowing that it's really important in terms of focus to be able to externally adjust things so that you can focus.
Mm-hmm. I liked how you talked about creating bumpers. Mm-hmm. And like these, you talked about, my husband is always nervous when I'm cooking because I'll get distracted and I'll go to the other room. And you talked about putting the baby gate up so that you can't leave.
Those are my best hacks ever. The place that I'm at now, it doesn't work. But the place that I used to live, the baby gate was amazing because I would totally just start cooking and start wandering off. And then I would run into the baby gate and it would just jolt me out of it and be like, all right, I'm cooking. And then I would go back and keep cooking. Or if I really needed to leave the room, I would turn off the pot. And then go leave the room. But before I put the baby gate in, I would just wander off and forget that things were cooking and burn things all the time.
Yeah. My middle son, we have not gotten him diagnosed yet. But the older he gets, the more and more I'm like, I think that we could dig into ADHD here. He has burned up our microwave 3 times. We've gotten 3 different microwaves and he's been cooking ramen noodle. And it's because he forgot to put enough water in it. And then he put it on too high and walked away and it just blew up the microwave.
Oh my God.
This is a really good sign that we need to be looking into this.
I know. I keep meaning to, it's one of those IB news. It's one of the tasks that's important, but not urgent. I want to make a list of like unofficial diagnostic criteria for ADHD. And have you blown up a microwave because you weren't, you know, like that would be one of them. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Even looking back now, I think I was 11 when I blew up our microwave because I left the bread tie on the bread. Mm. And I had always watched my mom thaw bread in the microwave. And so I was like, oh, okay. So I just popped it in there, turned it on. Microwave was making all these cool colors. I was like, so cool. I was just watching all this.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then all of a sudden it was like, pop. I was like, what just happened? That was not cool.
What I love about it is that not just missing a step and taking that part of the wrapper off, but also not realizing that something was wrong.
No clue.
I had something similar to that. Like, my mom asked me when I was in high school to help with the mashed potatoes, to start the mashed potatoes. And I'd seen her do it a million times and I'd helped her with it before. So I was like, I got this. I know what it's supposed to look like. And so I was so proud of myself. I washed the potatoes and I peeled the potatoes and I cut the potatoes up and then I stuck them in a bowl and I got out the hand mixer. I knew where to find the hand mixer because my mom labeled things. She was very ADHD friendly. And I started trying to mix these potatoes and it was not going well. They just were not mixing. And so I was like, well, it must be the wrong speed. So I turned up the potato mixer. I turned up this hand mixer to the highest speed that it had. And I put it in these potatoes and there ended up being potatoes on the ceiling. And I was like, God, how does my mom do this? It did not occur to me that I had missed a very important step of cooking the potatoes. So there was raw potato on the ceiling when my mom got home.
Oh my goodness, gosh. We have blueberry on our ceiling for some very similar reason.
Okay, I need this story. Yeah. This is amazing. Yeah. What?
Yeah, we were making blueberry smoothies and we put the blueberries in the thing and then forgot to put the lid on the blender and we hit it on full blast and the blueberries just went all the way to the ceiling. We still have blue dots all over our ceiling where we couldn't get it fully off.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like little things like that, like where you talked about the baby gate, there's little tips like that. And that, I hate the idea of tips and tricks, but there's these ideas and these systems you can set up that can help you accomplish the thing you're trying to accomplish, even if it's as quote unquote simple as making dinner, because making dinner, there's so many steps. Can you talk a little bit, that kind of goes into executive functioning some, just one, explain what executive functioning is for people who don't know. And then two, can you talk to the exhaustion of multiple steps?
Yeah. So executive function is like the CEO of the brain. It's this top-down process that controls everything else. The technical definition is a set of top-down cognitive processes or executive functions. So you might hear both terms, right? So there's executive function as a whole, and then there's individual executive functions that can be impaired in ADHD. Mm-hmm. But this set of cognitive processes helps us self-regulate so we can effectively plan, prioritize, and sustain effort toward long-term goals. And this is both delayed and impaired in ADHD brains. So kids that are 12 years old might only have the executive function of a 9-year-old. So a lot of times we can seem immature, or it seems like we should be able to manage this on our own by now. We should be able to clean our room by now. Why can't you? Your sister can, and she's, you know, a year younger than you. I grew up with a sister who was 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days younger than me, and her executive function was more developed than mine. So she seemed like the older one. She seemed like the more mature and responsible one. But these cognitive processes, they originate from the prefrontal cortex at the front of your brain. And it's the last part of your brain to develop. And it's the part of our brain that we associate with being an adult. So executive function in most people finishes developing by the age of 25, which is probably why that's when we let people rent cars legally. But in ADHD brains, it finishes developing later than that because of that delay. And even once it does fully develop, it's still impaired in ADHD brains. So there's a few executive functions that we know are impaired: set shifting, working memory, response inhibition, which is something that probably a lot of parents are very frustrated with. Response inhibition refers to the suppression of actions that interfere with a goal or are inappropriate or no longer appropriate in a given context. So response inhibition is what creates mental and temporal space between a stimulus and an action. So I see this thing, I react to this thing, or I am in a situation where it's not, my behavior isn't appropriate, but I'm having trouble stopping that behavior. That's really common. It can look like we're doing it intentionally. So response inhibition, it's what creates it creates mental and temporal space between a stimulus and an action. And the way that I explain it in the book is, have you ever shouted out answers without raising your hand as soon as a teacher asks a question, left your seat just when the meeting is starting, blurted out thoughts that popped into your head without thinking, or continued to overshare or overexplain even when you know you should stop? These actions are all common and frustrating results of impaired response inhibition. Stimuli happen and we responded. So a lot of people are like, just take a second to think about what you're going to say before you say it. We don't get that pause. In order to think about what you're going to say or do before you say or do it, you have to have enough of a pause to think, I I should consider what to do. We often don't get that pause. So the stimulus happens, we respond, and it's afterward that we go, ah, that was a bad idea. I could tell that that was not appropriate. But in the moment, we often don't, it's tough because we almost don't have a choice. It happens so quickly. Our brains move so quickly that what looks like bad behavior sometimes is often just impaired response inhibition. We didn't do it on purpose. So a lot of times it can look like we're being bad, like it's bad behavior, but it's not. It's just we don't have good breaks. We don't do it intentionally. It's that we didn't have the time, the space, the pause to think about what we wanted to do and make an intentional choice. And this is an impairment. It's not bad behavior. It's not something that you can punish. You can't punish away a disability. You can't. This is an impairment.
Yeah. And so what are some tools that parents can be thinking about to help their kids through these situations? Not necessarily to change the response time or to change that these things are happening, but are there some things they can help, yes, understand it and accept that this is part of who your kid is, but are there any other tools that you would suggest?
So one is building up your breaks, because you can do that. We don't have good breaks. Dr. Ned Halliwell talks about how we have these Ferrari engine brains, and we could win races, except we keep crashing, because while we have Ferrari engines for brains, we have bicycle brakes. Build up your brakes. That's one that I had in the book, and I had to cut it, unfortunately, mm-hmm. because the book was just way too many pages. But I think it's a really important one. You can build it up with medication helps give us that pause. Mindfulness, meditation is very helpful for that, because mm-hmm. in meditation, it's not about not having thoughts in your head. That's not really a thing that happens for people with ADHD ever, but it is practice with not immediately responding to those thoughts. Mm-hmm. So the thoughts pop into your head, but you don't immediately act on them, which builds up our ability to not immediately react to our thoughts in real life. Mm-hmm. when we're going about our day. So there are many different ways that you can build up your breaks, but that's an important one for that response inhibition specifically. But in terms of executive function as a whole, one of the things that I've found is really important, and it's the first tool I put in the toolbox, is have less stuff to manage. Because mm-hmm. so many of us are like, oh, I just got to manage better. I got to find the right system, or I just have to do better with managing my stuff. And it's like, or you could have less that you're trying to manage. And then either one of those, right? If you're able to find that magical system, which, by the way, sorry, doesn't exist. But like theoretically, if you were able to find a system that could manage all of your things and you could stay on top of everything, cool. But also if you have less to manage, then the executive function that you do have will be up to the task, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a really big one for me to understand, that I needed to pare down as opposed to trying to find the right system. That I went through so many planners and so many organizational systems, but really, and there's a lot of ways to do it. You can practice minimalism, have less actual stuff. But one of my favorites is have fewer projects on your plate at the same time, especially long-term projects, because that requires a lot of executive function, a lot of set shifting back and forth between different types of tasks. So I like to theme my weeks and go, okay, this one's a production week, and this one's a writing week, and this one is for business, dealing with business stuff. Because if I'm trying to switch between all of these different tasks in the same day, it's very difficult on my executive function. And so mm-hmm. I can get so much more done if I essentially monotask. If I batch tasks of the same variety together, I'm a lot more likely to actually get them done than if I'm trying to switch back and forth between those and a billion other things. Mm-hmm.
And then we are running low on time. Like I said, I knew I could talk to you all day long, but can you just talk just a little bit about motivation? Because I feel like so many people they beat themselves up over motivation, procrastination, when there's so much more to it. Can you just share, if you only had a minute or two to talk about motivation, the misconceptions, or a tool, what would you want people to know?
The big one is that different things motivate an ADHD brain, whereas neurotypical brains might be motivated by something that's important or something that has significant consequences. People with ADHD are generally motivated by things that are urgent, things that are new or novel, things that are the right level of challenging, So sometimes we're not able to motivate ourselves because something's too boring. It's too easy for us. And then sometimes it's too challenging and it's discouraging. So like finding that right sweet spot of the right level of challenging and then of personal interest. So understanding what motivates ADHD brains is really important. And I created a metaphor and I have a video about it on the channel and I talk about it in the book as well, of motivation bridge. If you imagine that there's a bridge between wanting to do a thing and actually getting it done, and there's that bridge made of motivational planks, for a lot of people with ADHD, a lot of those planks are missing. And little gaps in the bridge can be hopped over with willpower. But if you've got half the bridge missing, that's not going to be enough. You've got to fill in those planks. You've got to fill in the motivational planks. And so adding urgency, adding personal interest, adding challenge, or making it less challenging if it's too intimidating, adding newness and novelty, adding rewards to make it of personal interest if the topic itself is not interesting. These are all things that we can do to add motivation so that we are accommodating our brains.
I love that. What would you say to someone who's listening to this and they are like, wait a second, I think they're describing me and I've never thought of it that way. What would you want them to know about their brain, about ADHD, about just anything that's on your mind for them?
Welcome. You're not alone. ADHD is highly genetic. So if you're listening to this podcast for your own child, just know that a lot of the time it's genetic, right? If your child has ADHD, there's a chance that you have ADHD as well, and not a small chance. And even if you don't have enough symptoms to be clinically diagnosed with ADHD, there are still probably some traits, because we know that ADHD is polygenetic. There are a lot of genes that go into it. And so you might still have some of the genes, you might still have some of the traits, even if you wouldn't qualify for a full-blown diagnosis. And so you might still benefit from some of the strategies and some of the tools. And yeah, just welcome. A lot of parents don't realize that they have ADHD until their kids are diagnosed. And a lot of this sounds familiar. A lot of people don't realize they have ADHD until they come across my channel or now my book and go, wait a second, I was learning about this for somebody else that I love, but this sounds really familiar. So mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not alone, and welcome.
I love that. And where can people find out more about you?
I am at HowToADHD across all of the socials. And if you want the book or to learn more about the book or get some free resources from the book, howtoadhdbook.com.
I love that so much. Jessica, thank you so much for coming and chatting with me. I might stalk you from here on out. I do love everything you're putting out there into the world.
Or we could just be friends. We should just talk.
I would much rather do that. Yes. No, I have loved this conversation. I feel it's not often I get to meet people that I feel like, wow, we are really kindred spirits. There's a lot that we have in common, a lot of stories. I want to sit down and just chat for ages, but we can't do that today. So thank you again for giving up your time. Thank you for sharing your expertise with us and your story. I know it's not always easy to be vulnerable and share. And by getting out there and starting this channel years ago, you in turn then shared so much knowledge with the world and with people today to help them understand themselves and their kids. So just thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I look forward to learning from you and your podcast as I bring my own little one into the world.
Yeah, we would love to help you with that. And so if you are listening here, I just want to remind you that you are exactly the parent you were designed to be, and your kid is exactly the kid that they are designed to be. Up until this point, you might not have had the tools or the knowledge to understand how they operate and how they work, but you're exactly who you're meant to be. So I'm so glad you're here and you are not alone, and I'll talk to you on next week's episode. Bye, guys.
Oh, and before I go, one quick note for all of you who are enjoying the podcast. My new book is officially live, and I know you're going to love it. So just a quick reminder, you can go get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com. And if you do, you'll get some cool bonuses as well. Once again, get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com, and I'll see you next week.